Super Meat Boy caused a platforming storm when it first arrived in 2010. Its classic and simple approach harked back to the glory days of hyper-difficult platformers, seeing you do little more than hop your way through an increasingly challenging gauntlet of obstacles. Most players were unprepared for its devilish level design and precise timings, but completing the game has become something of a pilgrimage for serious platforming fans. After years of developing flash games, usually for Newgrounds, Super Meat Boy was Edmund McMillan's biggest title to date, appearing on consoles and home computers. Interest in the game remained so strong in 2018 that it's constantly released for new generations too, such as the latest version for the Nintendo Switch. Though 8 years have passed since it hit the market, players still want more, and a sequel, Super Meat Boy Forever, is currently reported as well on its way. The latest ports of Super Meat Boy feature a collaborative soundtrack by Ridiculon, David Scatliff, and Laura Shigihara, and you can hear Ridiculon discuss that music in next week's episode. Originally, composing duties were taken care of by Danny Baranowski, whose work played a huge part in capturing early audiences. His music evolves from fun, catchy styles into a guitar-laden orchestral workout, reflecting the game's own transition into extreme difficulty. Along the way, established melodies twist into dark world variations and chiptune remixes, presenting a wide spectrum of sounds. I'm Lee Tyrrell, and this is The Sound Test, where I look in-depth into video game audio and music, along with the very people who crafted it. Making his final appearance on the show, Danny Baranowski is back to take us through his soundtrack for Super Meat Boy. In fact, Danny's association with the title predates its release. Before Meat Boy became Super, he was simply that, Meat Boy. One of McMillan's many Newgrounds flash games, Meat Boy is free to play and still available. Including several pieces by Danny Baranowski, the whole package serves as a pitch-perfect introduction to its fully realised sequel. Danny's initial tracks were all fleshed out for Super Meat Boy, so how did those founding ideas come to be?
Those were just already written. Those were, basically, it was like, doing this game, I need music, what you got? It's got to happen soon. And so I just sent him a bunch of stuff I did, and he picked those. So they were, pretty little anticlimactic, I guess, but they were already made.
Danny coming on board for Meat Boy may have been off the cuff, but his involvement in the larger sequel was more considered. Super Meat Boy demanded a significant amount of new music, based on those first tunes, and Danny's experience with Overclocked Remix gave him all the skills he'd need. The only difference was, he was working with his own melodies instead of somebody else's.
It's going to be Super Meat Boy, it's going to be bigger and better, so I kind of just tried to keep the same idea, the same feel, but just, you know, better quality for the time. Now it's, I kind of look back and, God, that was how long ago? 8 years ago. Jeez. Just up to the best quality I could at the time. Real guitar was a big deal for me at the time, instead of just sampling stuff.
Guitars creep their way into Super Meat Boy's soundtrack until their chugs smash through to the forefront. Of course, Guitar is the main theme's focus too, sputtering its way through a jaunty 7-8 rhythm that speaks directly to Meat Boy's surreal setting and characters. That theme comes full circle as the colourful tone of early levels makes way for dramatic rock and metal.
Yeah, it's just me on a really bad guitar doing power chords mostly, but I guess that counts, right? And then a couple of my buddies did stuff. I had a couple guitar players I helped just do random stuff, like they're listed in the credits, Pete and Logan. But yeah, most of the guitar was just me just holding down the power chords with a beer bottle because my finger wasn't strong enough because I don't really play guitar, so... I mean, it was a really bad guitar, and like I think it actually, like, in hindsight, like I got good guitars now, but like it was like a Jackson or something. I don't know. It was like I got it for like $60 from my friend at work. He gave it to me out of the trunk of his car. Like it's just like, you know, seedy as it gets. But it just had a very kind of dirty, almost broken tone that, especially in the main theme, which is just this weird like 7-4 thing. I tried to adapt from a weird time signature. Test I was doing in Reason, just trying to turn that into something more like hardcore and main title-ish, and just, yeah, kind of just all gelled together somehow. It was a weird, trashy sound that ended up working, you know, one of those things where it's like better equipment doesn't always equate to better music necessarily.
Players come to associate Super Meat Boy with chugging guitars through repeated tries of its later levels, but we're given a slightly different impression to begin with. Forest Funk, which scores the first set of Light World levels, is a bouncy and upbeat track. Almost all platforming games toy with this trope to ease you into the grander journey ahead. As difficulty grows, music follows suit with darker instrumentation and a tumbling sense of urgency, mangling the optimism of opening levels.
Everybody who plays games, whether they know it or not, they have a sense of what level one music is, right? Like Super Mario Brothers, like your grandparents know the Super Mario Brothers level one track, right? Like it is, when you think about video game music, like, yeah, main theme, battle theme, like the first music that when people are first playing the game and that's looping and it's there and it's permeating the air and everyone's experiencing it, like that's the essence of it, right? That's by far the most important. So yeah, I mean, I think by that point I had been messing with music and remixing music and listening to game music long enough where I had a pretty decent sense of like what does level one music sound like, right? And it has to be welcoming at the same time it's setting a tone, at the same time it's encouraging you to learn. It's just got to feel welcoming. It's got to feel like it's a, I don't know, like a gateway to the rest of it. It's funny that the Forest Funk track is so popular because, like, I just don't like, because it's kind of happy and I hate happy music. That sounds terrible, but it's just like, it doesn't, you know, like the Beatles and poppy stuff, like, it, I mean, it's cool, it's, you know, fun to listen to it, but it's just, it doesn't interest me. And so, like, you know, the dark world version of Forest Funk, Dark World 1-1, you know, that's like, that's my stuff. Like, that's my jam, where it's just kind of like melodramatic, spooky, dark, weird, but not taking itself too seriously. So, I mean, honestly, it's just a lot of the light world, going to the dark world stuff, it's just like, okay, well, now let me do a version like the way I really want to do it, right?
The light worlds of Super Meat Boy represent the game's core levels. However, it's possible to unlock harder, Dark World variants. Each Dark World comes with unique music, which shares elements with its light counterpart while exploring its own territory. To add to that, every world map has a distinctive arrangement of its level's theme, meaning Danny had a lot on his plate. In a situation where a melody has to be reused or adapted multiple times, how does Danny maintain a thread that feels fresh in every instance?
I try to make pretty much every single track from scratch. I don't like to use templates, which would be so much easier, but I just don't like it. But, you know, moving some instruments over, that kind of stuff, to like establish a link, like the bell sound or something in Forest Funk. It was such a happy like ding 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 in the light one, that in the dark one I just, you know, what if this but menacing, right? It's our, you know, for game music, I think it's our version of Leitmotif, which, I mean, if the listeners don't know, it's the, you know, like Star Wars has the Obi-Wan theme and the Darth Vader theme. It's like when concepts or characters in music have their own, like, themes, right? And doing that in games, I think, is a lot more complicated and a lot more difficult. But yeah, that is my puzzle, for sure. Like, everyone's got that puzzle they like to work on, and, like, making stuff like this work is definitely mine. So, like, finding a way to write music over the course of a few years and keeping it cohesive, while at the same time not repeating yourself too much. I mean, kind of the simplest thing you can do to tie two tracks together, one is share melodies and harmonic progressions, and another thing is share instruments.
Dark World and menu tracks in Super Meat Boy often differ in some surprising ways, but they always feel familiar to the atmosphere of any given world. That kind of coherence across individual sections is important to video games. It means that players always get a certain sense of homecoming when returning for a new session. Recreating level melodies for both menus and the Dark World is a fair amount for any VGM composer to take on, and Danny also had warp zones to contend with. These hidden sections fling our fleshy hero into retro-inspired levels, usually making gameplay even harder. They bring with them chiptune-inspired renditions of Light World themes, gloriously bleeping and blooping like a grey brick Game Boy in the background.
I found some free open source VSTs called Peach and Toad, and they were kind of sample based recreations. This was before I found Plogue Chip Sounds, which is like a more musician friendly, almost hexadecimal, you know. Nothing's going to obviously be as authentic as just like, you know, physically programming NAS and like hooking up RCA cables to your thing, but I ain't going to do it. I'm way too lazy for that. So I'm always going to prefer like software, right? Like, I'm really interested in technology and stuff, but I'm not really a programmer, and like I've had a lot of false starts trying to be a programmer, and I kind of just eventually was just like, you know what, I mean, just, you know, I'm a composer, I'm just gonna lean into it. So I certainly at that point it was just like, all right, well, how do I make chiptunes? And it was these very simple free VSTs, and it was a fairly simple process of just like paring down the harmonic and melodic information and just converting it, porting it, I guess you could say, right? Where I tried to make them as similar to the originals, where it was like, I think they're crossfadable, like I think you can lay them on top of each other, which is another thing, like especially with Necrodancer, like, you know, and I feel like that's really interesting to me, like crossfadable music, different, you know, alternate universe versions, right? So yeah, it was mostly just trying to be like, hey, what if I had done this exact same song 20 years ago, what would it sound like, right? Yeah, the idea of making like a 16-bit version, I love that stuff. Like when I was doing remixes at OC Remix, one of my favorite ones was I did like a lounge piano jazz version of Castlevania music, because I'm like, this is not supposed to happen. And like, that's right? Like, it's like, oh, here's a heavy metal version of something. Like, oh, all right, that's cool. I like heavy metal. And, like, sometimes when you take, like, really songs that would not be appropriate for heavy metal, that'd be interesting to me. But, like, twisting and morphing musical information into different forms to adapt to a target, right? Like, that's extremely interesting to me. That's, like, I feel like that's the one thing in the world that I, like, truly understand, you know? Like, that's the mastery I'm pursuing.
As much as one theme unravels in its own world, be it through the warp zones, menus, or the dark world, Super Meat Boy features a wide revolution in its music overall. As I've previously mentioned, the spring in Forest Funk's step is soon replaced with the pumping desperation of tracks like Hot Damned. How deliberate was this direction in the soundtrack, and what inspired it?
So you're this cube of meat, right? And it's just like, there's nothing normal or reasonable about this. So, like, just playing to that whole, again, the melodrama. I love self-aware melodrama. I love Queen. I love Muse. I love just, you know, it's like, hey, we're ridiculous and we know it, you know? And sometimes that can go really wrong and just be really lame. Sometimes it can go really super right. I felt like there was a way to do that, and this is all post hoc rationalization. Like, I'm sure I didn't think of this when I was doing it, but it's like a way to just make it more ridiculous. It's like, okay, yeah, we're still a cube of meat in doing ridiculous things. Like, okay, but here's a whole orchestra. Here's fucking Carmina Burana. Like, you know, like that, I thought that was, those are the things that interest me too, is doing kind of like, I don't want to say meta because it sounds like I'm just trying to, you know, fit the zeitgeist, but like, more macro level decisions of just like, okay, well, if the game is progressing in this way, you can do things to score the progression of a game in more ways than just melody and harmony. You can do it in instrumentation, you can do it in arrangement, you can do it in these ways. The hell stuff, like, that's at a point in the game, it's like act 4 out of 5. It's a point in the game where, like, if you're chugging through this game, you're starting to lag a little bit, you know, you're starting to get a little bit tired of it. And so it was important to be like, nah, fuck you, we're back, you're in hell, man, deal with it. When I first saw some comments that were just like, man, I liked your music until it went all orchestral, I'm just like, but that was the evolution.
As we platform our way deeper into Super Meat Boy's narrative, even the guitars begin to make way for richer orchestral sounds. By the 5th and 6th chapters, players no longer have the training wheels of earlier levels, and the music only adds to the quickfire speed of those closing worlds. Outside of his association with Overclocked Remix, Danny was fairly new to the industry, then best known for his soundtrack for Cannibalt, an indie endless runner from Adam Saltzman. Still at the beginning of his career, and without any access to a true orchestra, how did Danny authentically synthesize more classical instrumentation?
I definitely was trying to punch above my weight with the orchestral stuff at that time. I did not. It was very, I was still using Reason, which Reason is great, but it's not great for very realistic orchestral stuff, which I didn't really understand the VSTs and stuff required to do, like, convincing orchestral. Reason is very, here's a unit of that makes sound and everything's colorful, have fun. Like, you know, it's not like orchestral music, which is so much more, it's so much more conducive to orchestral music to use a DAW that's just like, okay, here are your lines, they're very straight, here's a score editor, all that kind of stuff. I don't use score editors, but just like, and none of the, like, articulation controls, you know, because, like, in modern VSTs, the instruments, you can say, okay, well, it's a string and it's like a short staccato thing. Well, is it very staccato or is it kind of more loose? And then you can modulate that over time. Like, there's a very fine-grained control. Stuff I was using was just samples, pretty much. It was just like, there was none of that. And so it was just like, if I wanted to make something sound like a glissando or something, you know, real juicy, I had to just like combine sounds and try to just fake it. And yeah, I mean, like, I would just be horrified if I opened up that project file and saw the stuff I did. But there is kind of maybe an innocence or a rawness that I've maybe lost. I would imagine it's kind of a net gain, but not knowing what I was doing certainly made that sound a certain way that I don't know if I could do on purpose anymore, right?
Synthesizing strings can include finding the right bass sounds, applying appropriate reverb and compression effects, composing something that fits the instrument's limitations, and intensively editing the properties of each individual note. That process applies to brass and woodwind too, which are even harder to whip into something convincing. Yet, these are skills that any VGM musician needs in the 21st century. After all, where would boss music be without orchestras? Super Meat Boy's final bosses are given extra weight and panic through their string stabs, but it's all the more effective after the underlying evolution of Danny's OST. The game's boss themes follow that progression, upping the stakes from fast-paced synths to doom-tinged choirs.
Video game boss music is my favorite music in the world, like, without question. Like, the Final Fantasy boss themes, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, so on, like, those are just probably my favorite pieces of music in the entire world, especially, like, Final Fantasy 8, I think. It's strange taking inspiration from those, since they're all turn-based games, but there still is a rhythm to it. The pace of the actions that you have to take during that encounter are absolutely critical, especially in the boss tracks. You can get away with fudging it a little bit more, I think, in levels where there can be a little bit of an incongruency, but on the bosses, I think it's much more important to be like, you need to be thinking about actions on this time scale. Here it is. A lot of times when I had to write music for those bosses, they weren't done. I couldn't even play them. I could barely even like see the art or whatever. So some of it you got to do blind, but when you can, yeah, the first one, the Burning Forest one, the Battle of the Little Slugger, like I knew it was going to happen. I knew it. And when you can play it and feel that rhythm, yeah, absolutely. I don't feel like there's any kind of objective measure. If there's people out there like measuring the actual milliseconds between gameplay mechanics and basing it off of that, I mean, that's fucking amazing, but I don't do that. Like, I'm sure that would be really cool, but it's just, you kind of just, you know, feel it out.
Danny's music ended up among Super Meat Boy's most enduring features, and its soundtrack quickly became a valued classic. That's an even bigger achievement when you remember that Danny had, really, only just started with VGM beyond homespun remixes. He's gone on to cement his name in the industry's Hall of Fame, with a long list of credits. Those credits include titles like Crypt of the Necrodancer and Binding of Isaac, both of which have different philosophies to their scores. What role does Danny think music plays in gaming, and how important does he consider it to the complete package?
You know, you hear about how much music is of the experience, like a film. Is it like film and movies? Is it half of a film? Is it half of a game? Is it a third? Is it this and that? And I just don't really think that's a valid question. Whether it's 1% or 99%, like, what's important is that it's as big of a role as the game needs it to be. And there are plenty of... One of my favorite TV shows of all time is The Shield. No music. There's a theme song, there's source music in the show where, like, you know, someone will be at a party, you'll hear the music. No music. And when I first realized this, I'm just like, you know, it was very uncomfortable. But then when I was done with The Shield, I'm like, yep, that was 100% the right move. I think it's harder to find games that work well without music. There are certainly examples. I wish I had some on tap, but there are. I guess a recent one, PUBG. I play a lot of PUBG with my wife and my friends, and there's no music during it, and I keep trying to think of like something that would be good, like a low-level loop or something, and it's just no. It's just, you know, the silence is so instructive, and I mean, there's the mechanical thing of like not getting in the way of being able to hear other people and stuff. But anyway, to get back to the B-boy thing, I think it does help to, again, shape your rate of cognition. And then the tone of the music itself helps shape your perception of the art. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the number one thing you can think of, hopefully, for game music to do is definitely don't get in the way unless it's important to get in the way, right? When people say that thing like, you know, the best game music is stuff you don't notice or whatever, I cringe every time I hear that, because it's just like, no, you do. You notice good music, you notice all these kind of things. And so I think the challenge with game music is being noticed when it's appropriate to help the game, which is such a weird ego trip, right? Because everyone wants to be this. I mean, I don't know, everyone does. I want to be the star. I mean, I'm totally just a loud, bombastic, you know, hugely extroverted person. And so I love attention. I love being noticed. But I try to aim for the higher goal of like, well, maybe I'll be noticed. Maybe I should be noticed for making good game music that fits the game and not just like gobbling up every opportunity I can to like stick out, right? So, you know, picking your battles, I guess. So that's my convoluted word salad answer to that one.
As a whole, Super Meat Boy's original soundtrack is essential to establishing the pace of gameplay. It settles you in with jaunty, memorable melodies as you get to grips with controls, but moves in menacing directions as levels drop their guardrails. Despite strong melodies, there's always enough space given for those repeated sections that leave you with aching wrists, while, almost subconsciously, the various themes give colour and character to the surroundings. For many, Super Meat Boy was their first introduction to just how good VGM can be. Danny, the creator behind it, is remarkably humble, as I've found most in the profession to be. But players like me, and probably yourself if you're listening to this, hold it in the same regard as any of our favourite music.
I don't think this is ever going to feel normal, and I kind of don't want it to. It still feels kind of like I'm on this trajectory from when I did Cannibal years ago, almost 10 years ago now. Is it 10? Yeah, next year it'll be 10 years since Cannibal, and that's what started everything for me. That's what started paying my bills. That's what made me like a professional, right? It's no more normal. I'm still just like holding on as much as I can, right? So, but yeah, it's, I mean, you want to interview me, which is still like crazy that people care about letting me talk for an hour, because I will talk about fucking anything forever, if you might have noticed. I'll talk about the weather for twice as long as I talk about this, man. It's a character flaw. It's hilarious.
Thanks to Danny for speaking to me across three episodes of the Sound Test, but thank you too for taking the time to listen. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please make sure to subscribe or follow on whatever platform you might be listening on. There will be a new episode each week, though only two remain in this first series. I'll be posting up details on social media about 2019's second series as soon as they develop, so check out the description for all the appropriate links. I'll still be putting out content in the gap, so stay tuned for future streams, live radio shows, music, and much more. Next week's episode of The Sound Test continues the musical story of Super Meat Boy, and features Ridiculon discussing the brand new soundtrack the game received in 2015. All my Patreon supporters can receive early access to that second part for a single dollar. So head on over to patreon.com/_secretcave if you'd like to pledge your support and hear next week's episode right now. Of course, this doesn't apply if you're already a patron and hearing this episode in advance.